Have you ever come to while driving, suddenly realizing you have no memory of the last several miles? This common experience hints at something profound about human consciousness. In The Myth of Sanity, Martha Stout reveals that our sense of continuous awareness is largely an illusion. What we call sanity isn't the unbroken narrative we imagine, but rather a patchwork of consciousness with natural gaps and divisions. This revolutionary perspective has transformed how therapists approach trauma and influenced cultural touchstones from Lady Gaga's public discussions of dissociation to films like Memento and Us. The book's most powerful insight? Dissociation exists on a spectrum affecting us all, not just those with diagnosed disorders. Our minds naturally fragment when overwhelmed, a protective mechanism as ancient as humanity itself. We are all somewhat fragmented, driven more by past wounds than present realities. Our consciousness isn't continuous, but divided, multiple parts working as disorganized teams trying to cope with life. This fragmentation is most evident in trauma survivors through dissociation, the mind's automatic response to overwhelming fear. While protective during trauma, this disconnection often persists, creating psychological absences, like choosing between freezing in a dark house or risking fire by bypassing a broken fuse box. Trauma survivors face an impossible choice between emotional numbness or confronting painful memories. Trauma physically alters the brain. The hippocampus becomes less active during overwhelming experiences, storing traumatic memories as isolated sensory fragments rather than coherent narratives. Unlike normal memories that evolve, traumatic memories remain frozen, perpetual alarm bells in the psyche. Take Julia, whose brilliant mind contained no childhood memories, a fact she never questioned until therapy revealed others had vivid recollections. Her dissociation became undeniable when she discovered present-day memory gaps. "When I woke up Tuesday morning, it was Friday," she confessed, having functioned normally for 3 days with no recollection. Our sophisticated cognitive abilities helped us survive dangers, but created a unique vulnerability, the ability to anticipate and worry about future threats, leading to potential anxiety. To cope, we developed remarkable dissociative capacities that help us function during terrifying circumstances. These dissociative abilities aren't abnormalities, but evolutionary adaptations. Traumatic circumstances remain prevalent. 1 in 4 children faces severe physical abuse, 1 in 3 witnesses domestic violence, and many endure emotional neglect or media exposure to violence. Children are especially vulnerable without 3 crucial protections: life experience to contextualize events, physical power for self-protection, and developed self-knowledge. Consider 5-year-old Dylan, terrified after getting off at the wrong bus stop, or 3-year-old Amy, alone in post-surgery darkness, their developing minds overwhelmed by incomprehensible experiences. We also carry secondary trauma through exposure to others' suffering. With natural disasters and wars claiming millions since World War II, we've become shell-shocked as an entire species, bearing collective trauma in our cultural consciousness. How reliable are recovered memories? This complex territory blends fact and metaphor. While controversial, dissociative disorders consistently link to childhood trauma, and addressing these memories remains crucial for healing. During hypnosis, Julia revealed disturbing childhood experiences. Her mother threatened to cut her thumbs during hide-and-seek when she was 4, making small cuts that drew blood. Her father forced her to witness their sexual activities in a ritual called Little Coach. When Julia investigated her past, I explained that recovery doesn't require complete recall, just enough significant events to construct a meaningful narrative. Using a filmmaking analogy, she realized only one scene would be needed to show a child was being abused. In her 21st session, Julia transformed. She became Amelia, a 5-year-old who knew me as the doctor lady Julia talks to, then Kate, a cynical protector who helped Julia forget and get out during abuse. When Julia regained awareness and feared she was a lunatic, I explained these weren't signs of madness, but survival adaptations, the brain's way of compartmentalizing unbearable experiences during chronic trauma. Consciousness fragmentation affects us all, whether from direct experiences or media exposure. Even without childhood trauma, moderate dissociation has become common in adult life. Consider Matthew, a successful 35-year-old who downplays his parents' violent conflicts. His friends notice his space cadet routine, moments when he mentally checks out until physically prompted. His wife calls these episodes Matthew's coward thing, frustrated by his withdrawal during emotional talks. His childhood taught him to escape overwhelming situations, creating an automatic defense mechanism. Matthew and Julia's experiences differ in intensity. While Matthew's episodes last minutes, Julia's extend for days. These variations reflect how much mental compartmentalization was needed to cope with trauma's timing, frequency, and severity. Dissociation isn't exclusively trauma-related. It appears in everyday experiences, absorption in movies, losing time while reading, or driving on autopilot. Creative dissociation can be productive, as demonstrated by Joyce and Einstein. However, trauma-based dissociation uniquely serves to hide experiences from ourselves, a protective shield that becomes a prison. During my McLean Hospital internship, I met Crystal, a 25-year-old patient accused of eating another's pears. When she denied it, a childlike voice emerged saying, "I'm scared. I want to go to my room." Another patient identified this voice as Casey, not Crystal, who continued with authentic childlike sobs. Later, I encountered Garrett, who openly shared his dissociative identity disorder diagnosis. This tall, thin man with poet-like features had seen 5 therapists, 3 confirming his condition. Asked about having a sense of I, he replied, "No, but I have a real big sense of we." Garrett's childhood was shattered when, after his father's death at age 5, his uncle Dean moved in and terrorized the family. Dean ultimately killed Garrett's 6-year-old brother Left through abuse. Though prosecuted, Dean wasn't convicted, partly because 10-year-old Garrett claimed responsibility for his brother's death. This trauma fractured Garrett's mind into distinct personalities: innocent James, aggressive Gordon, and others, including one convinced of Garrett's guilt. Unlike many dissociative patients, he remained aware of his different personalities. Despite her severe dissociative disorder, Parker maintained unwavering maternal responsibility. Every personality protected her 2-year-old daughter, demonstrating how core values persist through fragmentation. For dissociative patients, a coherent meaning system, whether positive like Parker's child-centered morality or negative like self-centeredness, can unify a fractured personality. Patients with pre-existing responsibilities to children, creative pursuits, or ethical codes typically recover more successfully. Since dissociation begins as protection, patients often resist recovery while seeking relief. Victim identification particularly impedes healing by maintaining focus on suffering rather than responsibility. Recovery requires a secure physical and emotional foundation with firm boundaries. The journey progresses through structured journaling, clinical hypnosis, mindfulness meditation, and systematic investigation of one's past. True psychological well-being means staying present with reality while taking responsibility for healing. Integration involves acknowledging our fragments, understanding their protective origins, and building capacity to hold our full experience. In embracing our divided selves, we achieve authentic wholeness that encompasses all parts.